speaking today with Councilman Jerry Davis, who is in his first term as district council member in District B. Councilman Davis, thank you for talking to me today. You are in your first term in District B. Has the experience been like what you thought it would be when you ran for the office 2 years ago?
Yes, it has. We knew that was going to be a learning curve. And then also having the time to create, establish relationships with other council members, as well as the mayor, to be able to get some things done, talk to department heads, and get a little background on some of the things that's been tried before. So as we try to come up with solutions for certain problems in our district, we'd be able to look at the past and then maybe some things that have been tried before, and we'd be able to shape those and wouldn't have to recreate the wheel, so to speak. We just had to go from what the template that they've had and then try to throw some new things at it. So we knew that was going to be an issue, but but we also knew we'd be able to get some things done in the district in the last 19 months.
All right. Well, let's start. What would you say have been your main accomplishments, what you're most proud of in the time that you've been in office?
Well, it's something that you really can't measure in the papers and things like that, but one of the most important things that I am proud of is that my constituents understand that they have someone that represents them on council, cares about them. We've had some town hall meetings asking them which way they wanted me to vote on certain issues. My constituents like that I'm out in the neighborhood speaking with them. Sometimes when I'm in the office, I answer the phone. They like to be able to touch the council member. And so that's one of the things that you really can't measure. But I can. I love to see their faces when I knock on the door and I introduce myself or reintroduce myself. They just have like a glow saying, you're actually at my house. And so I'm going to say that's one of my biggest accomplishments, bringing that spirit back out in my constituents to, again, know that someone is out there speaking on their behalf that cares about them.
What would you say are the biggest challenges in District B, and what would be your top priorities for the district if you win a second term?
Oh, when I win a second term?
Well,
okay.
I talk to everybody, so I always say if.
No, it's all right. Well, one of the first things that I did when I was on the trail, we were talking about dumping as being an issue. And I reached out to a gentleman by the name of Professor Bullock at Texas Southern University. He's an environmental specialist. And he wrote a book about the city of Houston 30 years ago. And he cited in several chapters about illegal dumping within District B, Acres Homes particularly. And it's still going on today. And so I brought him back on my illegal dumping task force that was created this year to help us try to come up with some ideas of how we could stop or slow illegal dumping down. It's going to be a huge challenge for the city of Houston for us to limit legal dumping. It's an act very similar to speeding. You put up posted warning signs and you drive at 55 or 65, 70 miles an hour, but you still have people that speed. So we're doing what we can do now. You put the steps the steps of no dumping, but they still dump. And so now we've been able to bring in cameras and specific sites that Solid Waste Department has identified as a horrific area, 311 calls from our constituents. So we now understand that there has been educational component. Solid Waste jumps in and picks up the illegal dumping. And then also, when we catch the violator with this infraction, there's a price to pay. Picking up, community service, paying a fine, possibly even jail time. And so that's one of the things that we're working on now.
Okay. Intercontinental Airport is in District B. As you know, there was a big United is expanding their Terminal B at Intercontinental Airport. There was also a bit of a controversy regarding United opposing Southwest Airlines coming in and turning Hobby Airport into an international terminal as well. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on at Intercontinental Airport and where you think things stand with United and Southwest.
Well, at that time, it was just like any other business that there were forecasts that were done, agreements or deals that were made with previous decision makers, the city of Houston, with United as it relates to the development of Intercontinental Airport. And it's just like any other business. If you want a particular area to grow and you want to see certain things happen at this airport, then, again, that forecast that was made was in the best interest of the development of an IEH. And so now they felt that by allowing Southwest to do business at Hobby, you kind of detour from the plans that were both agreed on. I'm not saying anything was signed or anything like that, but in the direction of what they need to do to have a better City of Houston hub, bringing people in, connecting flights and things like that. When you take flights away, then you can't, or you allow other carriers to do the same flights, then there's a choice. And I understand people can make whatever choice they want, but then that limits the business, and they have to, that particular company, and they have to change their forecast and their business model as it relates to growth. And they couldn't do so many flights. So that's less connectivity through our Houston hub. And that was the most important point that they were trying to make. And so I believe you can't continue to ask this company to invest so many dollars into our local hub if you're not going to do the same, if you don't have the same plan that was originally agreed upon. So, and as a district council member, with IH being in the district, I supported United. That was a thing to do for the businesses around that area. And I would expect every other council member to do the same thing. It wasn't going to kill business for the city of Houston. And yes, and competition is good. But sometimes, we do certain things in the city to, or in a business, to ensure certain growth. Like we do our incentives for tax abatements for businesses throughout the area. We incentivize those businesses to come to us. And so we can have certain conferences here, certain amount of employees that's going to come with any other big corporation. And so you kind of, I guess, for lack of better words, throw a monkey wrench into the system, and everyone has to stop, regroup, refocus, and then come up with their plan, what's the best interest for the city as well as what was best interest for United.
Yeah. Fifth Ward in District B is, just northeast of downtown. It's, if you look at the pattern of development in recent years around downtown, Montrose, Midtown, now the East End. A lot of these places have become very hot for development. A whole lot of stuff is being built up and people are moving in. That hasn't happened so much in the Fifth Ward. It's kind of the last relatively inexpensive real estate close into the city, close into downtown. It seems like cheap land doesn't tend to last very long, especially when it's close into the city. It seems like in time there's going to be development in places like the Fifth Ward. What would you like to see happen there, to redevelop a part of town like that, a historic part of town like that, but still, not price out the people who live there?
Right. Well, and that's going on now. The development as far as homes, businesses follow rooftops. And so what I'm doing right now is the round two Hurricane Ike money that's coming through. we're petitioning for a developer to bring in 100 rental units. Nice units that you wouldn't be able to tell that they were either market rate, mid-rate, or low-rate. They're going to look the same. And they're going to be spread out throughout the Fifth Ward area, infilling some of those abandoned properties. With that, you solve a couple of things. One, you put more people into the area, increase your tax base for the city in that tax increment reinvestment zone. Then you also put more eyes on that street so it can help us stop some of the illegal dumping. So there's a series of things that we're doing. No, we're not waiting. It's happening now. We have Laura lots. Lots that have been, taxes weren't paid. The city came and recouped them and banked those lots. And we're looking for developers to build some of those low-income and mid-income homes in that area. Once we create this plan, or as we're putting this plan into effect, you know, there are grocers and retail companies that we've been talking to, like HEB and Walmart, and then some of the smaller restaurants that would be able to partner up with grocery supply and other grocery supply companies throughout the, in the city, to help us create this, fill this void that's been, I guess, in the Fifth Ward area for years. And then, at any other time, if any person buys a lot and they want to build whatever house they want, that's their right in the state of Texas. You know, I can't stop someone from building a $200,000 or $300,000 house next to one of these rent houses. And so we just try to take a balanced approach. We want the area to grow. We don't want it to all to be low. We want a mixed level like you see in other parts of the city. And that way they would keep some of the property value down and not price anyone out.
Now, the city council passed the changes to Chapter 42, the Density and Development Code. You're one of, I think, only two council members to vote against it. Tell me your perspective on the Chapter 42 changes.
Well, early in this interview, I mentioned that I have town hall meetings, and I asked my constituents which way, you know, we had several meetings in the Acres Homes, Northeast, Fifth Ward, Pleasantville area to explain Chapter 42. We had the planning department come out on different occasions to talk to civic clubs and super neighborhoods about 42. And we've had lawyers to come out to help redraft some of the deed restrictions that some of the neighborhoods had about Chapter 42 and how to protect themselves. And at the end of the day, they said, we would feel much better, council member, if you would vote no and try, we don't want this to pass. And I said, okay, but if it does pass, let's see how we could, you know, put in safeguards to protect ourselves. And that's basically taking, you know, we have some larger lots in that Cashmere, Acres Homes, Northeast area. And, you know, to take a nice, quiet subdivision, and you might have a couple of 7,500 or 10,000 square foot lots in there, a developer to come and pick it up and build 5 or 10 townhomes on it, creating a higher traffic flow in that small, quiet neighborhood is a problem. The infrastructure may not be up to par to handle this. And so that's one of the reasons why I voted no. One, they asked me not to, and that's what I did. Now, we're on the second phase, protecting ourselves. We went through our neighborhoods, civic clubs, super neighborhoods, knocking on doors, passing out literature. If you want to know how to protect yourself in your neighborhood, so to keep it the same, keep the culture the same, keep the original tent of big lots, pecan trees, you know, oak trees, so kids can go out and play. We need to set minimum lot sizes and your setbacks. And so we've been going throughout all the area, talking to them, coupled with the planning department, putting in applications so we can, you know, basically do what they wanted to do when they originally bought their lots 30, 40 years ago.
Okay. Talk about infrastructure. The primary vehicle for improving infrastructure, streets, and drainage in Houston these days is Rebuild Houston.
Correct.
Give me your overview of how Rebuild Houston is going and where you see opportunities to improve it.
I sit in on the Rebuild Houston Oversight Committee, even though I'm not a part of the voting body. I sit on to make sure that District B's best interest is taken into consideration. I wasn't here when it was passed and when it was orchestrated, but it's what we have right now, and I understand why we have it. Do I agree with it 100%? I'm going to say no. Do we need part of it? Yes, we do. Our area in District B, our areas in District B, we have streets that needs reconstructed. And I can't sit here and tell you I know all of the sub layers of the street and which ones have poor infrastructure and the drainage. And we just passed an ordinance last week for $2 million for engineers to go throughout certain parts, and specifically District B, to find out the drainage area and what's going on in these particular areas. We have some areas in Fifth Ward that you go walk down the street for four blocks, you don't see one drainage. And I don't understand. I'm not an engineer, but I see that as being a problem. And so it's a very sensitive subject. I think Rebuild Houston can be the vehicle for creating better infrastructure throughout the city of Houston, but I believe it can't go only to major thoroughfares. I believe it needs to go from inside to out, hit the neighborhoods first, then come out to major thoroughfares. So while I'm on council, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure, since this is the vehicle for better streets and better roads, I'm going to make sure that we get our fair share within our communities, within our neighborhoods. We have a bunch of open ditch drainage systems throughout, particularly in the Fifth Ward and the Acres Homes area. And a lot of them want curb and gutter. Now the book is still, the thought of which one's better. You know, when I grew up in Armstrong Acres, we had an open ditch system. Never flooded. But we also had a community that made sure that those ditches were kept clean. And in some of these areas, you know, we have streets that may have five homes on it when it should have about 40. People use those streets to illegally dump. And so you don't have an open drainage system. So therefore, it can be problematic. So I understand why they want it closed up.
Okay. What's your view of the city's current financial situation?
We're going to be... this year we're fine, as everyone can see. The next few years we're going to have some problems. We're going to have to go back and tighten up the belt in certain areas. One of the things I'm doing in the Department of Neighborhoods is asking them to see how we can be more efficient. Department of Neighborhoods is one of the departments that District B needs a lot. They'll go out and check the homes for abandoned properties, illegally dumped trash in areas. And so a few years ago, we lost about 40 inspectors. And so I don't want to just continue to sit and dwell on what we don't have. I want to see how we can make our system more efficient and use what we do have and try to accomplish the same goal, manage it a little bit better. And so knowing that we are going to have to tighten our belt, and foreseeing that we can't go back and hire for those 40 inspectors. And part of it, those inspectors were hired on financed through grants from housing. And so when that was cut, we had to lose some of those employees. And so understanding that's not a stable source of revenue. We need to find better systems within our department and how we can streamline and be more efficient because we know that we're going to have a tight budget within the next few years.
Well, one area of concern that people often cite with the budget is pension funds in particular. There's the police, municipal, and fire. And as you know, Mayor Parker has been trying to get the legislature to pass a bill to subject the firefighters' pension fund to meet and confer requirements, as the other two are.
Right.
She hasn't had much luck with that. The firefighters oppose it. Do you support that effort to subject the firefighters to meet and confer to get a bill passed to do that?
You know, right now, you know, it didn't have any success in this last session, and so we're going to go through another year, and then that probably half a year before they can even talk about that. What I want to see is our citizens in Houston, okay, our elected officials, plus our firefighters and our police and our city workers, to be able to come together and solve this. We don't need the state to be able to tell us what to do. You know, it's like me going to your house, Mr. Cuffner, and telling you how to budget, you know, budget your checkbook. You know what you need every month. You know what income and what finances come to your house every month. So you should be the number one person to control it with maybe a professional to maybe help you, guide you, or consult you in the right direction and how, you know, what's practical and what you need to look for. So I want us to be able to work this out in-house down here in Houston. I don't know what mayors have done in the past, but I'm sure that we could, you know, we have an elected body right now that should be able to work this out amongst ourselves. And that's what we're going to have to do. And that's, as an elected official, you're going to have to make some tough calls at certain times. And, you know, we have to get ready to make some tough calls within the next few years.
Okay. As you know, representatives of the city's food trucks came before council a few months ago to ask for changes to ordinances that would allow them to operate downtown. That wasn't taken to a vote at the time, but I expect it will come up again. What's your position on that? Do you support changing ordinances to allow food trucks to operate downtown?
It's another situation. You have to take two different sides into account, like you do everything. But one of the things we have to make sure that we don't do is cripple our restaurants that have made a huge investment within our downtown system. These brick and mortars sites, you know, these guys have put in hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars into creating what we have today. They pay a lot of taxes, which allow us to operate in the manner we operate today. They put money towards management districts as well as increment reinvestment zones. So that attract people, companies that want to move their corporations downtown. I'm not going to say I'm necessarily against food trucks coming to downtown. I want them to have their opportunity to compete and to bring in money. But I want to make sure that we do not cripple or hurt the businesses that have invested and are going to continue to invest in our downtown system. And also, there's a safety issue that we're concerned with that we haven't really fully vetted yet. How safe as far as the tanks and making sure that the inspectors are at the trucks, you know, at certain times and so on and so forth. So we just hadn't, you know, to say yes or no right now, can't do that because it hasn't been completely vetted.
Okay. In 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in the city of Houston that forbade it from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees. As you know, the world's a different place now. A number of Texas cities have passed ordinances, some school districts too, to allow to offer domestic partner benefits to its employees. If a movement arises to overturn, repeal that charter amendment and allow the city to offer domestic partner benefits to its employees, is that something you would support?
Oh, yes, I would support it. I mean, it's a no-brainer. You have someone that, you know, you care about. If I can give my employee benefits to my, you know, my cousin, if I were allowed to pick up one person and, you know, I cared about my cousin and he were in need of whatever, I would share my benefits with him or her. we need to really look at it as humans, what we, you know, what we're doing here. Not politicians and elected officials. It's about us caring for someone else. And that's what we're showing here. If we were to put this on the table and pass it, we love someone else and want to make sure that they have what they need to survive. And I don't think it's our right to discriminate who we give that to.
Okay. I'm asking everybody this question. Who do you support for mayor this year?
Who do I support for mayor?
Yep.
I have to, you know, that's going to go on the ballot when I go in to cast my vote. That, yeah.
All right. And when people do go to vote on November 5th, why should they vote to give you a second term in District B?
They should support me because of the things that we've been doing. You know, looking at our agenda, making sure that this is the best thing for one District B in the city of Houston, making sure that small women, minority-owned businesses have their seat at the table. This year we increased that up to 34%. We're bringing summer jobs to our kids next summer. We're $1.5 million, but that's not enough. We're going to push forward. I shot an amendment out or co-sponsored an amendment to bring in $3 million to the after-school program. Unfortunately, it didn't pass, but that's not going to stop me because we're going to continue to do it. When you have an area in HISD, that's my Cashmere Garden area, that is the poorest area in the district and one of the poorest in the county, it's a problem. It pushes out the least amount of high school diplomas. So we must, and we have the statistics that tell us the problem. We need to be able to go and fix the problem. No one's going to drive a car that's faulty. You know the engine is out of oil and it's a problem. We're not putting oil in the engine or getting your oil changed. So right now we have this opportunity. So I'm going to continue to push efforts like this, hold contractors accountable to the citizens of Houston. I'm going to continue to go out and do grassroots efforts to let the people know that, hey, there's someone they can count on. And that's one of the reasons why. Or some of the reasons why they're going to come out and vote for me in November.
All right. Councilman Jerry Davis, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Yes, sir. Thank you.